The format for this evening is that we're going to hear from these four speakers. First of all from Julia, Richard O'Dwyer's mother, who's going to tell Richard's story and talk a bit about what it feels like to be one of the sadly increasing number of ordinary families in this country who are being touched and devastated. Yeah, that's exactly the reason why you'll put it on. Thank you for demonstrating that. It's done now. You see, someone had to do it. It's normally me that does it in the middle of speaking. So there you go. That's put your phones on silence. We'll hear from Julia first, who will tell Richard's story, talk about what it feels like to be one of the increasing number of ordinary families in this country who are devastated by the nightmare of instant extradition. That's extradition without evidence tested in a local court, without discretion and compassion. Then we're going to hear from other speakers. My policy colleague, the Liberty's policy director, Bella Sankey, and academic colleagues from this university, Jessica Zun and Jawed Siddiqui, who are going to talk about the risk of instant extradition for students and young people and other people who engage with the internet. You don't even have to leave this country anymore to face extradition abroad. You can just be online. So very, very real risks there. We're going to hear from each of them for about 5 to 8 minutes, and then it's going to be open to the floor for you to ask questions, raise points, and so on. Now, a member of our audience has asked if he might do an audio recording of the meeting. The speakers have all agreed for their contributions to be recorded. If when you ask a question or raise a point you'd rather not be recorded, please just say so at the beginning. Just indicate that, and then the recording will be switched off at that point. And it can be turned on again afterwards. So just remember that when we get to the Q&A session. It's good to make these contributions as brief and succinct as possible, obviously, so that we can get more in, and we will finish promptly at 8 o'clock. So first of all, let's hear Richard's story from his mum. Don't cross mothers, by the way. If you want to mess around with people's human rights, there's a lot of it about, but don't cross a mother who wants to protect her son. That's been my experience of working with amazing, inspirational women campaigners over the years: Doreen Lawrence, Janice Sharp, who's trying to protect her vulnerable son Gary McKinnon down in London, and this lady who sits next to me, who I've been so inspired by. If every son had a mother who would fight for him like this, then perhaps all our children would be better protected. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together.
Well, thanks all of you for coming tonight. It really means a lot to me. And I'd like to thank Liberty as well for hosting this event. I'm going to start crying now. How crap is that? Right, I'll try not to. I'm good at doing that, you know. Well, who the hell would have thought that a student in his bedroom would land in so much blooming trouble? That typically would have to be my one. But, you know, obviously now we know that's a very real danger. And it's very frightening to be in this position. Extremely frightening to go to a police station to think you're going to answer bail and be told that your case has been dropped in the UK, but we'll swap it for a one-way ticket to America, and then get rushed off down to a magistrate's court in London where Richard was in handcuffs and chucked into some kind of a cell. And then for me to sit witnessing numerous people being processed, and I mean processed like a bit of a production line, through a court system, and having their extraditions to various countries, mainly in Europe, rubber stamped. And observing that scenario, I just thought, God, that's going to happen to Richard in a few minutes. Terrible. So that has been actually the most traumatic experience of this whole time. So since then, I've toughened up a bit, hopefully. Doesn't look like it, does it? But anyway, just to sort of give you a bit of a sort of an idea of what this whole experience is like, I can only describe it as extremely destructive. Destructive to many aspects of your life. destructive of relationships, puts pressure on relationships, makes them break down. Pressure on work, you know, being a mother of a son threatened with extradition forces you to turn yourself into somewhat of a mini lawyer and bury yourself in the internet day in and day out. And so really there's no time to actually go to work. But, you know, we've all got bills to pay. And if you've got a day job and you depend on that, like most of us do, you've got to go to work. And it's really difficult trying to balance the two when your instinct is telling you that you've got to work on your son's case. So that has been really hard. You know, I've had loads of time off work. And but I said I was toughening up. Blimmin' heck. I'm not toughening up. Okay. But they still better not cross me much more. So I'm trying to adapt to it, really, adapt to the situation, to get on with the job. And there's a hell of a lot of work to do, but it's just so frightening because we're not fighting a crime here. We're not fighting an allegation of something that somebody thinks Richard has done that is wrong. We're actually fighting our own government, and we're fighting the extradition law. And it feels to be quite a futile fight because the odds appear to be stacked against us. So you feel quite powerless, but we have to go on to try and find the best way out. The least damaging way for Richard, really, because, you know, he's in the prime of his life. He's a good lad. He's pretty good at what he does at university. He's got a bit of tunnel vision because it's like computer or car most of the time. But, you know, when he gets on with a task, he likes to see it through the end and to the end and do a good job of it. And he doesn't really like to worry about extradition too much. He just brings it out of the box when we have to go to court or go and talk to the barristers. So it's a bit of a protective mechanism, really. So sort of head in sand and I'll just listen when I need to. So at least that's my perspective on it. Others might know a different side. But yeah, so it's a really terrifying time because the thought of having to go to America, you know, it's not very good for prison visiting, really, I shouldn't imagine, apart from, you know, the cost, the distance, having to have time off work, and that whole thing is just terrifying. So part of, you know, the reason for tonight is to raise awareness. We're all at risk, you know, it's my son now, it could be yours, or your husband, wife, partner, or friend, and whoever that could be, I don't think anybody can manage that on their own. You need help. You know, Richard could not be doing this on his own. He wouldn't know the first thing to do. He wouldn't even, you know, think to go and get himself a lawyer, really. So in this position, you need all the help you can get because you get none from this government, not a single bit of help. And so that's why we're all campaigning for the law to be changed, the extradition law to be changed, to allow some little flexibility and a sense of humanity brought into the extradition law. We're not suggesting that criminals shouldn't be extradited, not at all. But, you know, Richard never left the country. He's never been to America since he was 5 years old. So it's absolutely insane to suggest that he should go to America to be tried for something which actually isn't even a crime in this country. And if it were, he could be tried here for it. So that, you know, that's about it, really.
Thanks.
Sorry, but it's sorry.
Well, that's the human story of a rather inhumane law. And now we're going to hear from Bella Sankey, who I'm very proud to say is my colleague. She's the brains of the outfit. I'm just kind of being a master of ceremonies. She's been Liberty's policy director for the last few years and has done great work in that role. Parliamentary lobbying, legal research, everything that needs to happen behind the scenes, behind a big high-profile campaign like this. And she's worked with lots of lawyers and parliamentarians who oppose the current extradition arrangements, and she's going to explain Liberty's analysis of Britain's extradition arrangements and why we think they should change.
Thanks, Shani. Well, you've already heard this evening in incredibly compelling terms the human cost of an extradition system that currently lacks compassion, discretion, common sense, and quite frankly a bundle of fundamental safeguards that we used to have to protect people from being summarily, instantly extradited abroad. The approach that Liberty takes to extradition is, as Julia mentioned, of course extradition has its place. Of course countries need to work with each other, states need to work with each other to make sure that serious criminals are brought to justice. In a world where it's increasingly easy to travel abroad, if there wasn't some sort of cooperation, then people would get off scot-free and it would be very easy to be a fugitive and to have a level of impunity. So that's the starting point. Of course, there need to be arrangements in place to bring people to justice where they cross borders. But as well as there being an incredibly important public interest in investigating and prosecuting crime, the impact of a system which allows you or me or Richard or any of us here today to be parceled off needs to be taken seriously, and there need to be some basic safeguards to make sure that blatant injustice isn't allowed to occur. And the reason for that is that extradition is a trauma in and of itself. You're taken away from your loved ones, you're taken away from your supporters, you're potentially going to a country where you might not speak the language, you might not understand the process that you're being subjected to. Of course, in America, they speak the same language as us, but we have extradition arrangements with lots of countries all around the world where a different language is spoken. And sometimes you face pretty tough justice. Our extradition partners include not only America, but Russia, Moldova, Turkey, countries with pretty dubious human rights and fair trial records. Even in the US, the country that we have a supposed special relationship with and so much in common, a lot of us would find their justice system pretty alien indeed. They have a plea bargaining system that creates irresistible pressure to plead guilty to a lower charge to try and get a lesser sentence. They have pretty tough sentencing regimes, pretty tough jails, and they don't have legal aid. Well, we're not going to have it for much longer. But that's an incredibly important part of the trauma that's involved in extradition. Of course, if you're a foreign suspect in America or in any other of these countries where you can be sent, you're immediately deemed to be a flight risk that you might take off if you're not banged up as soon as you arrive. So it's very unlikely that you'll be granted bail. And of course, it's not just us that has huge delays in our justice system. You can be in prison in any one of these countries for months, sometimes years, before your case even comes to trial. And then after all that, if you are exonerated, are you going to feel that justice has been done when you've already faced significant punishment? So it's for those reasons that we've got to make sure that there are some basic protections for people in this country before they're shipped off and parceled off to another jurisdiction. And it's for those reasons that Liberty's been campaigning for several years now to try and change our pretty rotten extradition system. Our extradition law dates back to 2003. It was passed following the tragic events of 9/11, and it was in many ways a reaction to those events. And it sprang from a desire of our then government to come up with a system whereby people accused of serious offences, terror offences, could be easily shipped off to stand trial in America. But what's happened is that there have been many unlikely victims of this law, of which Richard is just one. What's staggering about Richard's case is the way in which it highlights so many of the flaws with our current system and so many of the things that we're campaigning to put right. The first problem with our current law is that there's no ability for a British judge to bar somebody's extradition if as in Richard's case, the activity that's alleged took part in whole or in substantial part here in the UK. Now, for somebody like Richard, he didn't actually leave his bedroom or his house. He was messing around on the internet, but he managed, so the US alleged, to have broken their law. And there are many cases like his. Take the case of Gary McKinnon. Again, he didn't leave his bedroom when he was on the internet looking for evidence of UFOs. So there are huge numbers of cases now stacking up where people haven't left their house, they haven't left their town, their city, let alone left the country, yet they're facing extradition abroad. We used to have a system whereby our judges could look at a case like this and say, hang on a minute, in this case, is it really right, is it really fair and just that somebody needs to be shipped off to be tried? Couldn't they better face a prosecution in the UK? But that safeguard is completely gone, and that's one of the things that we're campaigning to have put back into our law. Another safeguard that we no longer have is the ability of our judges to determine in a preliminary way whether or not there is actually a case to answer when an extradition request comes in. So at the moment, the US don't need to make out a basic case, an answerable case, to extradite Richard, to extradite Gary, to extradite Christopher Tappin, who was shipped off a few weeks ago. So there's no need for a basic case to be made in a British court, and we say that, quite frankly, that's wrong, and that reform needs to be urgently made. The other reform that we've been lobbying hard for is that the dual criminality safeguard should be inserted back into our extradition arrangements. Currently, you can be extradited anywhere in the EU for a crime alleged by one of the EU member states, even if that crime is not deemed to be a crime here in the UK. And that's a pretty shocking state of affairs. It means that something that Parliament has not deemed to be a criminal offence can be something that you're sent abroad to stand trial for. It's pretty obvious why this is a bad thing. We wouldn't dream of getting rid of that safeguard for many countries around the world, for example, those that still criminalise homosexuality. But we have got rid of that safeguard for our European partners. Some people might think, well, hang on a minute, we all have pretty similar standards across the EU, don't we? We probably criminalise pretty similar things. That's certainly not the case. Let's remember the French have recently banned the burqa. Many countries in Europe have very draconian speech offences. And the Belgian authorities were so worried about this reform in the way that extradition works in Europe that they actually put a bar on extraditions for abortion because they were worried that other European countries might request extraditions there. So it's pretty shocking, but that is the current state of our law. So as I say, the unfairness of Richard's story sadly is not unusual. There are more and more cases going through the courts every day that clearly demonstrate how rotten our extradition system is. So what can be done? What are we all here for? What's the next step? Well, actually, it's very easy for this extradition arrangement to be put right. It's not rocket science. It's not brain surgery. All that's required is a bit of political leadership, and that's what we've been pushing for now for several years at Liberty. There is a significant amount of political momentum, unlike in all of the areas that we work on. Unusually, actually, with extradition, there is a pretty significant amount of cross-party support for reform to our extradition laws. But many areas of political promise and political pledges, our politicians really need to be pushed and pressed if they are going to bring forward the reforms that are so desperately required. Both the parties now in the coalition promised reform to extradition when they were in opposition. There's been a review commenced by the Home Secretary, but the government is certainly dragging its feet. They've been in power for several years now, and there has been no urgent reform. So I think our main message to you this evening is that if you care about the state of extradition law in this country, if you care about Richard's story, and if you think that it's unfair, then really the best thing that any of us can do is to get in touch with our elected representatives and to really put pressure on them to change the law.
Thank you, Ben. On that subject of political leadership, I should point out that every one of the Sheffield MPs was invited to address this meeting this evening, but sadly they were all unavailable. Very, very busy time for Sheffield MPs. this evening, it seems. However, I notice a late arrival to the audience, because David Davis MP, not a Sheffield MP, but from Halton Price and Howden, neighbouring but not that close, has taken the trouble to attend. Do you want to respond to that sort of challenging remark from Bella Sankey, David? Do you want to say a few words about?
Well, I can say a few words. Bella's right. Bella's right. This whole thing was conjured up in the panic after 2001, after 9/11, and it was a panic. If it had not been a panic, we would have had the double jeopardy, not double jeopardy, but the double penalty rules, which would say it would have to be a British crime as well as a foreign crime. So it was a panic. It was carried through too quickly. None of the other parties at the time had the nerve to stand up to it. One of the problems of terror-related offences or terror-related legislation is that parties collapse because they're terrified of opposing it. A little later on, from about 2005 onwards, we did oppose it. I came in as Shadow Home Secretary, and actually Mr. Clegg was Shadow Home Secretary for the Liberals at the time, and both of us promised it would go. The thing to understand, I think what many politicians, including ministers at the time, didn't understand was really quite how one-sided this system is. I mean, the easiest demonstration is the most recent one, Tapping. I don't want to frighten the mum on the panel, but the experience was awful. In that Mr. Tapping went to America. He will by now have been threatened with about 15 different charges, which will add up to 35 years in prison if he's found guilty. It will cost him many millions, that's not hyperbole, of dollars to defend himself. He will almost certainly lose if he gives in. 98% of people give in for plea bargaining. They'll only charge him with one penalty. They'll come back here and serve. He'll serve 6 months in America, then come back here and serve in American prison. If he doesn't, he'll spend the rest of his life in prison in America. So that's the sort of asymmetric nature of the threat. And what the other thing which politicians didn't understand in this country at the time, I think they do now, is that it's completely asymmetric. The American Constitution, if we're talking about the American case, actually gives protection to American citizens, which we have not given to our own. If we had simply said to the Americans, we'll treat it exactly as you would an American citizen, and that would seem to me utterly fair and straightforward and reasonable, we wouldn't have this problem. We wouldn't have this problem at all. It would be tried in Britain and dealt with in Britain. And finally, as Richard's mother says, of course, the easy way to deal with most of these things is trial in the home country, the so-called forum question. Trial in the home country. Why? Because actually you can fly out a witness or two witnesses or three witnesses for a week, and that's not a great inconvenience. Whereas flying out a suspect, perhaps to sit in prison for 2 years, and a pretty unpleasant prison for 2 years, is draconian. So, where are we? The government had an inquiry, the Scott Baker inquiry, which bluntly was a dry, dusty, impractical nonsense. It's very long-winded. I don't really recommend you read it. It's hundreds of pages, or at least over 100 pages. It's very legalistic. It does not take on board the practicalities that 98% of people give in to plea bargains in America. So not only are they punished, not only are they punished by the process, not only do they have to face the prospect of serving a term, they effectively are forced to confess to a crime that many of them did not actually commit. So it's a grotesque injustice, and you know, justice is the fundamental of any state. And some of my colleagues who jump up and down and try and claim patriotism, I say a patriot is somebody who is most angry at injustices in their own country, and that's what this is. It's injustice in their own country. So I'm afraid we need you to press your MPs, including the local Sheffield ones, to press your MPs to put pressure on the government to turn this around. There has been pressure, there's been a motion in the House on it, which we won easily. We, not the government, won easily. And if we don't get success, then there'll be more motions coming down the road. But at the end of the day, they've got to feel it matters to you. I'm afraid it's the truth of this government as well as the last one, that what they respond to more than anything else is public pressure, public outrage, public concern. We've got some newspapers on side, the Daily Mail, the Times, a number of others have fought the corner for us, but the end result depends on you. So please, please, nag the hell out of your MP until he gives in. Thank you.
If you're on Twitter and want to tweet about this evening's event, please do so using our username, which is @libertyhq, and the hashtag extradition. So if anybody is tweeting, please do that. So we've heard the human story. We've heard Liberty's analysis of what's wrong with our extradition laws and what ought to change. We've heard David Davis give you the political reality of what it's going to take if we're going to change things. And now we're going to hear from the academy. We're going to hear from people who understand computers and understand just how vulnerable our young people are in this country. And it's also great to say that we're hearing from two academics here in Sheffield who are prepared to come up and stand up and be counted and show solidarity with this student at this university. So first of all, I'd like to introduce Jawed Siddiqui, who is the Emeritus Professor of Software Engineering at this university at Sheffield Hallam. He's also the chair of the BCS Formal Aspects of Computer Science, the Executive Committee of the IEEE Technical Council. Don't ask me what these things mean, but they sound very learned. Technical Council on Software Engineering, and was a member of the Executive Committee of the Council of Professors and Heads of Computing, and its representative for PITCOM, the Parliamentary IT Committee. Professor, welcome.
I was asked to write 150 words, so you know, to generate a lot of acronyms.
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak. The facts are these, that we're all here to see what we can do for Richard O'Dwyer, who's a student at Sheffield Hallam University. I think he still is a student at Sheffield Hallam University, as far as I'm concerned. He was studying software development and interactive media. As you know, he's to be extradited because of the US request for alleged copyright infringement. What he actually did was he had a set of links. He had a website called TV Shack, and that's all they were, a set of links. He had no content on this site, okay? So that's all it was. That's all he was doing, okay? Now, the legal position, I think a lot of people have talked about, but it comes under Copyright Designs and Patents Act, but it's not clear to me that whether he was a conduit to that or whether he was doing that. And in fact, the defence, if you read the judgment, the clarity isn't there as to whether he's done something. In fact, Keir Starmer, who's the Director of Public Prosecutions, has said, and I quote, in relation to the conduct, was not and is still not considered to be a category of serious. So something that isn't a serious crime, possibly not even a crime, I think you'll agree, doesn't, you know, merit extradition. If there is anything to be answered, it should be answered in this country. Now, many of you, you know, may sort of balk at the fact, I mean, I've discussed this with a lot of people, well, he was earning money. Well, Richard's website was popular, and I believe, as an enterprise student, he had advertising on that website. It's alleged, I don't know, that he earned £147,000. Now, there's a large number of media companies that earn hundreds of millions of dollars by putting out software that you can share things on, yeah, that you can download stuff. And in fact, if you go to the website, to Julia's website, there's a wonderful and amusing YouTube video by Mike Mozart, which shows that CNET has done precisely that and made hundreds. So what did Richard do wrong? He didn't earn enough money. That's the problem. He should have got more money, then he wouldn't have been, you know, been charged. So why sue Richard? Why not CNET? It seems to me that double standards are working. Many of you watch probably DVDs and things. You know, that big thing comes up. Piracy can cause, you know, world disaster and da-da-da-da-da. I don't know. I never read it. Try to go past it. Well, actually, if you look at the experts that look at this, the open source movement takes the view that the benefits
actually outweigh any of the... because the business model as it works, I mean, and those of you who are young and do this sort of thing will realise, often bands will put a song up so you can download it free. So what a surprise, later on you'll go back and you'll buy the rest of the stuff, okay? So the business model can work in that way. So there is lots of stuff going on here that needs to be looked at in a much more imaginative, innovative way. Because if you were to look at copyright, okay, you would find that in this media there are ways of getting around this, and there are people who have, as I say, really good ideas, and Richard should be part of that debate, and a lot of young people should be part of that debate, in my opinion. As people have said, the extradition is one-sided. Controversy surrounds the extradition treaty in 2003. The prima facie evidence was, as has been said previously, was got rid of. Both parties agreed to look at it again, as David Davies said, but they didn't. Now, I think it's the duty of any government to protect its citizens. And as Julius said previously, although not on this occasion, the US has come for the most vulnerable. It came for the ill when it came for Gary McGannon, who has Asperger's. He came for the elderly with Chris Tappin, and now for the young. So it's shameful that governments, successive governments, and the current condemned coalition is frightened to stand up to the US. What would Churchill say? What needs to be done? Well, Julia set up a petition. I think you should go to it and sign it. I certainly did, and I sent out a letter to the Council of Professors and Heads of Computing. That's every single university, and I think on that day the petition doubled in number. You can do the same. That's a start of something. I wrote to the Vice-Chancellor of this university. I've never got on particularly well with any of the Vice-Chancellors, but that's another matter. I'm sure you'll find it exercise your duty to one of our students. I'm sure many of the Sheffield Hallam staff will be delighted to hear exactly what you intend to do. He said, you know, I followed the case, da-da-da-da. It'd be inappropriate for me as the leader of the institution to say or do anything that would lend the university's name to either side of the argument. Well, what a surprise. My take on it is this. And there's Chris Bates here, who's one of the tutors in the recruitment sort of thing. If we were to advertise how cool Richard is, we'd double our numbers at this place. You know, if they really want to. I think you should contact your MP, raise a question in Parliament to force Cameron's hand into doing this special deal, you know, with the special relationship. People have talked about more legal things to do with the Forum Amendment. There's a variety of ways we can make sure. I think this extradition is wrong. We cannot let a Sheffield Hallam student who has shown flair, innovation, enterprise, all the things that this university claims to teach and foster, which successive governments say young people should do, even if alleged conduct is to be answered. It's, after all, a UK DPP conduct has said it's not serious, so I think it's completely disproportionate, and we should do everything possible to make sure that Richard isn't sent to the US. I'm ashamed and disgusted by this government failing to do its duty to protect a British citizen. The UK government has capitulated to US extradition too often. The treaty doesn't treat UK citizens fairly, as people have said. And I think, as Liberty pointed out, the signs are really ominous in the way successive governments have rolled back. And there's an issue of principle here about the fact that liberty is being taken away. And I think we need to act, because it could be your son, it could be my daughter, it could be me, it could be you. So let's make sure that we change this.
And our last speaker before we go to wider contributions is Jessica Sun. She's an associate lecturer here again at Sheffield Hallam in the Department of Computing. She teaches a number of modules and has also been involved in research. In addition to teaching, she's also a freelance technology consultant, and she works with business. So she's got a real understanding of the broader reach of this kind of technology, and no doubt also of the vulnerability that everybody engaging with the internet faces in the light of what we've heard about these extradition laws. Jessica.
Thank you. So obviously I could echo a lot of the things that Javed said, and speaking as a lecturer in IT, although I'm a much more junior position, I do teach students on website development courses who are learning how to write websites. So they're starting the very early stages of writing websites. Now, what I want to do for those students is to encourage innovation. And cases like this, what we're basically saying to them is that you can't be innovative, you can't be creative, because the American government might come after you like they did Richard. I've got students asking me in their classes, am I doing the right thing? Am I infringing copyright? And actually, little things like they copy a picture from another site to put on their site. I know people in business who've done that. That is actually a much more direct copyright theft than what Richard has done. So I'm saying to them, that is a more serious crime. If you think about it in terms of business, we all want to have creativity and innovation. We want new websites to be created. We encourage what people like Google Plus have done and Facebook, where we can all share information. This new internet age with smartphones is allowing us all to share information with each other. How many people in this room have sent links on Facebook and Twitter and things like that? Are you absolutely sure that what you're sending in that link is not to copyright infringing material? I think it's quite hard and probably impossible for everybody to do that in every single case. Another question that we pose to the students is, if I was to take all of your laptops away and give them to the police, would they find any copyright infringing material? Absolutely, and I'm sure I would probably be guilty too. However, as far as I'm aware, they didn't find anything on Richard's computers that they seized. It's not yours. So thinking of it in terms of our vulnerability, Richard was 17, 18 when he started this site. It was before he actually came here to learn web development at any sort of level. He was just, self-taught, a little bit done from at college, and he was creating websites, which is fantastic. We've just heard on the news recently about the innovations in schools, that they're wanting children to learn programming in schools. So we want to encourage our children to create, but then we're going to restrict as much as we can what they can do if it infringes on anyone's profits in a big company. And I think that's perhaps the issue here. So in terms of us as individuals, all of those people who posted links on the website who were posting to a copyright infringing material, actually, they were committing more of a crime than Richard was, because they were sharing that information. We're getting cases now where people are being prosecuted for downloading material at home on their home broadband connection. We try to regulate this. We've got new laws coming in all the time trying to regulate it. I'm sure you're all aware about SOPA and PIPA that were in the news recently, the ACTA agreement that's recently gone through. There are lots of other ones that they're putting through under different guises, so you've got to be very careful to look out for them, because they're slipping through under the net now. All of a sudden, we could be breaking a law we didn't even know existed, because it's just been created and it's out there. So we're all at risk. If we want to have a free voice and we want to be able to speak, then we've got to be very careful how the governments are going to govern this. Now, the issue for Richard is that he's not being tried in the UK. I think we've heard a lot of people saying, yes, he should be tried in the UK. But I think personally the reason he isn't being tried in the UK is because there wouldn't be a conviction, because he hasn't actually done anything wrong. He created a website which, as far as I'm concerned, was similar to a mixture between a Google search engine and Facebook or Twitter, where people could post links. People of similar interest sharing links to things with people. So the question really is, do we want to allow America to make those decisions? Or can we govern our own internet users in our own way? And I think what we've got to now get in place is that each country has its own way of governing its internet. Otherwise, we hand over our internet sovereignty to America and we let them make all the rules. So then I have to start teaching American law instead of English law to my students.